I described the Eisenstein and Eisenstein series, and as well an intertwining operator between the induced representations. I described it, both of them, as formal, and it's, at this point it's just formal, sums. One's a sum and one's an integral. And in fact, it follows formally. I repeat that this is formally from the definition that these really are intertwining operators in the following sense, that the Eisenstein series at x and a translate of the vector phi by an operator coming from this induced representation at lambda really is an intertwining operator in the sense that this is the same as e of x, y, right translation of this function of x by y. This is for x and y in GA. And that follows right away from the definition. The definition is concocted, so it is formally intertwines the two actions of G, one by right translation on X, and the other by letting this induced representation act on a vector phi. And secondly, the other operation, M of S lambda, so that's an operator from HP to HP prime, this would be for S, one of these transformations in AP, AP prime, that this, if you first of all let the operator IP lambda of Y act on the space HP, and then you send that space HP to the space HP prime by this formal integral, that is indeed equal to what you get by first letting MS lambda act, and then letting I act, the induced representation, but at P prime and at S lambda. So it follows formally from the definition that these really are intertwining operators. However, those that sum and integral that I wrote down really is formal. It's an infinite sum, and it's an integral over a non-compact space. So, however, the two definitions, are given by a sum and integral over, a non-compact space. Over non-compact spaces. And it's not just a formality to prove they converge. As a matter of fact, they usually do not converge. So that's a very serious matter. They don't generally converge. So the first result that Langlands proves in the theory is that they do converge, but in a rather restricted region. And to describe that region, we first of all have to choose a dense subspace of the Hilbert space on which the representation acts. Let me write HP0 for the subspace of vectors in HP. So if you recall, phi was functions on G which were left invariant under NPA, MPQ. But then you can look at the M component of such a function, and it's required to be in the discrete spectrum. But this discrete spectrum breaks up into infinite, a direct sum of infinitely many representations, And let's only consider functions phi such that that m component lies in a finite direct sum of irreducible representations. Such things would be dense in the set of all m components. Or to put it another way, let's say that, so there's actually two conditions, but the first is that one lie in a finite sum, of GA irreducible subspaces of HP. This is actually with respect to any one of these representations, any IP lambda. The point being that the M component of a vector phi is, in general, belongs to an infinite direct sum of irreducible representations, and let me only choose functions for which almost all of the pieces in that infinite direct sum are zero. You're still going to get something that is dense. And secondly, another another finite condition, we ask that they be K finite. So that's a similar condition, but relative to the right translation action on phi by k. In other words, this would be asking that IP lambda k, and this in fact is independent of lambda, it doesn't matter what lambda is, but the set of the infinite set of vectors obtained by letting this act on the given phi as k ranges over all elements in this compact group, and we'll ask that this spans a finite dimensional subspace of HP. The restriction of the representation to K, right translation by K on the space elements in the space HP, that would break up into a direct sum of irreducible representations of the group K, and let's just ask that, there's a little theorem here that I'm implicit in this, and that is that any one of the representations, these things actually, any one of the irreducible constituents of this, that its restriction to K breaks up into a direct sum of irreducible representations of K that occur with finite multiplicity. So these are just two finiteness conditions, and they give you HP0 is dense in HP. So as long as you restrict yourself to those kinds of vectors phi, you have a convergence of both the Eisenstein series and the intertwining integral, providing that you restrict phi lambda as well to the cube over a cone in the vector space. Rather restrictive set, actually. So suppose that phi is in HP0, and lambda, so lambda is a vector in the complex vector space, is such that that its real part minus this real vector rho p, that lie in the positive chamber. In other words, its value at any alpha check is positive for every alpha in delta p. So this would be g equals sl3, and P equals P0. And so this will be the space AP star equals AP0 star. And what we would expect, we want representations, we want to study representations that are unitary. That's when lambda is purely imaginary. But this convergence says, it doesn't give you anything. Let me state this. That if lambda satisfies this condition, then the sum and integral defining E of x phi lambda and M of s lambda, both of them converge absolutely. And absolutely and uniformly to the extent that they give analytic functions of lambda. So in other words, this is actually a function. So for any given x and any given phi of the kind chosen, that's an analytic function of lambda in this region. And this is actually an operator-valued function, but it's as such, it's an you can think of it as an operator-valued function which sends a finite-dimensional space to a finite-dimensional space by restricting the finiteness conditions on this. So you can think of it as a finite-dimensional matrix. And as such, it is also an analytic function of lambda. So what is lambda here then? Here's the vector rho p0. It's in the positive chamber. And we're asking for the real part of lambda to lie in the translate of rho p0 by the positive chamber. So this is where the real part of lambda has to lie in this thing. Now, this is not really very helpful as it stands, because we're trying to study, remember, we're thinking of something like Eisenstein series as something like the analog of the function e to the lambda x in the theory of Fourier series, namely when lambda is purely imaginary. So I'm interested, I really would be interested in these things when lambda is purely imaginary. So that means This represents the real part of lambda. So over every point in here, you've got a two-dimensional space as a purely imaginary cone over this given real part. So for any one of these, you have a two-dimensional space obtained by adding I p star to this given point. So what are we interested in? We're interested in this point, where we add the imaginary space over that point. And unfortunately, that's well outside the domain of convergence of these operators. So we are interested, and we're really interested in these objects when IP lambda is unitary. In other words, when the real part of lambda is zero. So what do we do? What does Selberg originally, and then Langlands later in general, what do they do? They say, well, all you can do is try to, you've got an analytic function in the two-dimensional, in this example, a two-dimensional complex manifold. The imaginary, that's a cube over that real chamber, what do you do? You try to analytically continue that function of lambda. See if you can get an analytic function in a larger domain in particular. See if you can get extend it to here. But that's not a bad idea, because that would preserve those intertwining properties up there. They're analytic. So if you can continue, I mean, the action that defines IP lambda of y, that's, if you remember how we define that, that's a pretty simple kind of analytic operation. So if we could analytically continue these two things, E and M, that would still preserve those relations, and we'd get good candidates for intertwining operators at the imaginary, at the unitary points that we're interested in. Yes. That one would have to. I mean, that would be kind of like a meta theorem. I guess it. Pardon me.
You don't get any of the lambda.
Actually, you probably get a few others, but you really. I mean, the experience, say, from local harmonic analysis is that, say, the local Plongeon formula is given by these induced representations when lambda is purely imaginary. I mean, they're the ones that you would expect ought to give you the spectral resolution. Indeed, they do. We'll see. But so you must analytically. Continue these two functions, E of X, phi lambda, and M of S lambda, to the real part. Well, let's just say you have to analytically continue them. That's what's really difficult. That's the very hard part of the theory. I'll maybe say a few words about it in a minute. But what I'll do is I'll state the end result of what the theory says, basically the main theorem in Langland's book. And I think for working with the trace formula, there are some things you need to know about the theory, but really what's most important is the final theorem that I'm about to state. So really one can work with it, at least for a while, just knowing the final results of the theory of Eisenstein series, which is good because it's pretty difficult to work your way through the proofs. What does the final theorem say? It says that Eisenstein series, and with these companion operators M of S lambda, they don't have a role in classical Fourier analysis, but basically it says that Eisenstein series behaves exactly like the theory of Fourier transforms. So we'll state we can state the main theorem that looks like a fancy generalization, but of exactly the same kind of form as the theory of Fourier transforms. Well, there's two parts to it. First of all, that this analytic continuation operation can be carried out. So suppose phi lies in the space where we have a definition, a rigorous definition of the functions in a region. The assertion is that E of X phi lambda and M of S lambda, in fact, do have analytic continuation. Well, not actually, maybe analytic's not quite the right word. They have analytic continuation as meromorphic functions. I should call it meromorphic continuation. So they have analytic, they can be analytically continued as meromorphic functions. So, like the Riemann zeta function, which is analytic in a right half plane, these things can be analytically continued but could possibly pick up poles, the way the Riemann zeta function does at S equals 1. Meromorphic functions, into the entire complex vector space. But fortunately, part of the theorem is that even though they might have poles, they are and they don't have any poles in the imaginary space about this point. So they're analytic on for lambda in I A P star. And moreover, they satisfy functional equations that you would expect, given the intertwining properties above, namely that the that Eisenstein series and the operators M of S lambda are compatible with each other, in the sense that if you take the Eisenstein series, not for the vector phi, but rather the vector M of S lambda phi, that's a vector in the space P prime, so lambda's in AP star, so you'd have to take S lambda here. That's something in AP prime star, or rather its complexification, that this is in fact equal to the Eisenstein series EX C lambda. And secondly, the operators M are compatible with each other if you have a pair of such transformations, M of T S lambda equals M of T S lambda, M of S lambda. This would be if you have this S and you have another T in W A P prime, A P prime prime. So, well, these functional equations are part of the story. You can't even write these functional equations down. These are an intimate part, an important part of the analytic continuation, because you can't even write them down in the original domain of convergence. Suppose S is a reflection that sends lambda to minus lambda. So supposing you're dealing with L2 and you just have